A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's been doing DIY around the apartment, and he bought one of those $15-$20 toolboxes from a chain store here. Ample room, does the job, but every time he opens it, he gets hit with a wave of chemical smell he didn't notice in the store. He wants to know if quality plastic still smells, whether there's a metal that won't rust or dent, or whether he should be looking at something else entirely. His actual use case is a portable carry box for a drill, a few screwdrivers, a laser measure. He wants weatherproofing, drop resistance, and as close to buy it for life as he can get. And he flagged that maybe a traditional toolbox isn't even the right object. So today we're going to talk about what a toolbox actually is, what it's made of, and whether buy it for life is a realistic goal for something you fling around a patio.
The smell is the right place to start, because it's not just cheap plastic being cheap, it's a specific chemistry problem. That $15 box is almost certainly commodity-grade polypropylene or polyethylene, and the smell is volatile organic compounds evaporating out of the polymer matrix. Residual solvents from processing, unreacted monomers, slip agents they add so the mold releases cleanly. These things are in there, and they off-gas slowly.
And he didn't notice it in the store, because the store is air-conditioned, and the box was sitting on a shelf, sealed, with nowhere near the heat it gets in his apartment, or on the patio.
Right. Off-gassing is temperature-dependent. Heat mobilizes the volatiles. Once the box sits in a hot car or bakes on a Jerusalem patio, the VOCs start coming out in earnest. And then he opens the lid, and the concentration has built up inside that sealed volume. That's why it hits him in the face. The smell was always in there. It just needed the heat to wake it up.
So the question is, whether spending more on plastic actually fixes that, or whether he's just buying a more expensive version of the same problem.
It fixes it, but the mechanism matters. The difference between a $20 box and a $100 box isn't plastic versus not plastic, it's the specification sheet. Engineering-grade polymers use the same base chemistry, but they're compounded differently. Low-volatile additive packages, UV stabilizers, impact modifiers. Pelican uses a proprietary resin blend, often ABS, or a polycarbonate blend, and they specify low VOC materials. Milwaukee's pack outline is impact-modified polymer with the same kind of discipline. The reason the cheap box smells is that the manufacturer bought commodity resin, probably with recycled content, and used cheap mold release agents. The reason the expensive box doesn't smell is that someone at the company wrote down what the resin is allowed to contain and paid for it.
So the honest answer to Daniel's question about whether quality plastic still smells is, it might have a faint new smell for a few days, but it should dissipate. If it's still off-gassing months later, that's commodity grade.
And there's a practical tell. If the manufacturer won't tell you what polymer it is, it's commodity grade. Pelican will tell you, Milwaukee will tell you, Festool will tell you. The chain store box won't, because the answer is whatever was cheapest that week.
That's a good rule. The spec sheet is the smell test, so to speak.
Which brings us to metal, because Daniel said he'd prefer to avoid plastic entirely. And I understand the instinct, but metal has its own failure modes, and the traditional answer, steel, has a very specific one.
Rust.
Rust. Steel rusts when its protective coating fails, and the coating always fails at scratches and edges. You paint a steel box, you drag it across concrete, the paint chips, and now you have bare steel. In a coastal city like Jerusalem, well, not coastal exactly, but with humidity and occasional rain, that bare steel starts corroding. The box doesn't fail all at once, it fails at the scratch. And once rust starts, it creeps under the paint and lifts it.
So the Buy It For Life community has shifted toward aluminum.
Specifically, anodized aluminum. And here's the thing about anodizing that most people get wrong. It's not a coating. It's an electrochemical process that grows an oxide layer into the surface of the metal itself. The oxide is part of the aluminum. It can't peel or chip because there's nothing to peel. You scratch it, and the scratch is just more aluminum oxide. It doesn't expose bare metal the way a scratch on painted steel does.
That's the key difference. A scratch on painted steel is a wound. A scratch on anodized aluminum is just a scratch.
And the denting concern which Daniel raised is real, but it's a geometry problem more than a material problem. Aluminum is softer than steel, yes. But a flat sheet of thick steel will dent more easily than a thin sheet of aluminum with ribbed or corrugated panels and reinforced corners. The shape is doing the work. Think about a car door. It's not thick steel, it's thin steel with a shape. The shape gives it stiffness.
So the question isn't how thick is the metal, it's how smart is the shape.
And that's where the design philosophy diverges. Daniel described his worst abuse case, a drop off a ladder baking in the sun, rain exposure. A traditional toolbox with a top handle and a cantilevered tray is designed for stationary storage with occasional carrying. It's not designed to be dropped. It's not designed to be sealed. It's a box that happens to have a handle.
Whereas a Pelican-style case is a sealed system. Double wall construction, pressure equalization valve, O-ring seal. It's not a box. It's a container.
And that pressure equalization valve is one of those details that separates industrial design from consumer design. When a sealed case gets hot, the air inside expands. If the case is truly sealed, the pressure builds and the lid wants to pop open or the seal wants to deform. The valve lets air pressure equalize without letting water in. It's a one-way membrane. That's the level of thinking that goes into a case designed for military use.
So we've talked about materials. But Daniel said something in his prompt that I think is the real key here. He said maybe a traditional toolbox isn't the right objective. Let's take that seriously.
He's right, and the reason is revealing. A traditional toolbox is a storage object. A portable carry box is a transport object. Different jobs, different priorities. The traditional toolbox optimizes for organization and access. The lid opens, the cantilever tray presents the tools, everything has a place. But it's not designed to be carried long distances, it's not designed to be dropped, and it's not designed to be sealed against weather.
The portable carry box optimizes for exactly the abuse Daniel described. The drop, the sun, the rain. Organization is secondary, or it's handled by a modular system.
And this is where the industrial B2B angle Daniel mentioned comes in. When you buy from an industrial supplier, you're not paying for consumer aesthetics or retail markup. You're paying for compliance with standards. Look for boxes that cite military specifications or IP ratings. IP is ingress protection. An IP67 rating means dust tight and protected against immersion in water up to 1 meter. That's the language of industrial durability.
So instead of asking which material, Daniel should be asking which rating.
The rating is the shortcut. But let me explain what IP67 actually means in practice, because it's one of those specs that sounds abstract until you translate it. The 6 means dust tight, not dust resistant, dust tight. If you leave this box on a construction site for a week, the inside stays clean. The 7 means it can be submerged in a meter of water for 30 minutes and the inside stays dry. That's not rain survival. That's drop it in a puddle and forget about it survival.
So a box with an IP67 rating will survive a forgotten patio rainstorm without a sweat, which is exactly what Daniel asked for.
And the mechanism is the gasket. This is the thing most coverage gets wrong. Rain survival isn't about the box material, it's about the seal. A metal box with a poorly designed lid will let water in through the seam. A plastic box with a compression gasket and over-center latches will keep water out even if the material is what people think of as inferior. The gasket is the hero.
The over-center latch is doing something specific, right? It's not just holding the lid closed.
It's applying compression. An over-center latch goes past the point of maximum tension and locks into a stable position that's pressing the lid down. That pressure is what compresses the gasket and makes the seal. A cheap latch just holds the lid shut. An over-center latch squeezes it shut.
So the latch is a sealing mechanism, not just a closure.
And that's going to matter later when we talk about what actually fails on these things.
Let's talk about heat and UV, because Daniel lives in Jerusalem, and the sun here isn't gentle.
UV degradation is a real failure pattern for plastic, but it's specifically about the UV stabilizer package. UV light breaks polymer chains. Over time, the plastic becomes brittle. It loses its impact resistance. A box that would have bounced when it was new will crack when it's been in the sun for 2 years. The fix is UV stabilizers, which are additives that absorb or block the UV before it can break the chains. Cheap boxes skip them because they add cost. Quality brands specify them.
The failure isn't plastic melts in the sun. It's plastic turns brittle in the sun.
The timeline matters. A cheap box without UV stabilizers in direct Jerusalem sun will start to show brittleness within a couple of years. A quality box with a proper stabilizer package will last a decade or more. Same base polymer, different additive package. It's the same story as the smell.
We keep coming back to the same theme. The material class doesn't tell you much. The specification does.
Which is why the Buy It For Life community's actual consensus isn't what most people think. It's not find the indestructible box. It's find the box you can repair. Because nothing is truly indestructible if you abuse it. But a box with replaceable parts and a lifetime warranty is as close to permanent as you can get.
The warranty matters as much as the material.
Pelican and Festool both offer lifetime warranties that cover breakage, not just defects. That's a statement about the design. They're saying, if this breaks, we'll fix it. And the reason they can say that's that the parts that fail are replaceable. The latch, the hinge, the seal, these are field replaceable parts.
Which means the box is designed to be repaired, not just replaced.
That's the real answer to Daniel's question about Buy It For Life. It's not about finding a box that never fails, it's about finding a box that fails gracefully. A broken latch on a cheap box means the box is garbage. A broken latch on a Pelican means you order a new latch for a few dollars and keep going.
Let's talk about the modular systems, because Daniel mentioned he uses this as a portable carry box, and there's a whole category designed for exactly that.
Milwaukee Packout and Festool Sustainer are the two big names. They're stackable, interlocking units with sealed gaskets. The advantage isn't just organization, it's that the system is designed as a whole. The latches, hinges, and seals are engineered for repeated opening in harsh conditions, not just the box body. A Packout box is drop tested. Milwaukee publishes the ratings. The Sustainer has dust-sealed latches and interlocking feet that lock into the unit below.
You're not buying a box, you're buying into a system.
That's a real consideration for Daniel, because he said he carries a drill, a few screwdrivers, maybe a laser measure. That's a small, light load. He doesn't need a massive chest. He needs a compact, sealed, portable unit. The best answer might be a small Pelican-style case or a single Sustainer, not a traditional toolbox at all.
The drill is the wild card. A Bosch 12-volt drill with a battery and charger takes up real space. You can't just throw it in a small case with the screwdrivers.
That's where the modular approach earns its keep. You put the drill and charger in one unit, the hand tools in another, and they stack. When you need to go out to the patio, you grab the stack. When you need just the screwdrivers, you grab the one unit. The system adapts to the load.
But there's a cost. Packout and Sustainer aren't cheap. A single Packout box can run $50-$60. A stack of three is a couple hundred. Is that actually Buy It For Life, or is it just premium spending?
That's a fair question, and the BIFOL community would say it's about reducing waste. You buy one stack that lasts 10 years instead of five cheap boxes that each last two. The math works out over time, but the counter is that a $300 Pelican case is still a plastic box. It's engineered plastic, but it's plastic. If Daniel's instinct is to avoid plastic on principle, spending more on plastic doesn't satisfy that instinct.
There's an aluminum alternative in the modular space too. The Sustainer is polymer, but there are aluminum cases built to the same modular concept. The trade-off is weight and cost.
Aluminum cases are lighter than steel, which matters if you're carrying a stack, but they're more expensive than polymer, and they don't have the same impact absorption. Polymer flexes on impact. Aluminum deforms. A polymer case that gets dropped bounces. An aluminum case that gets dropped gets a dent.
Which is the denting concern Daniel raised. The polymer case might actually be better for drops, even though the aluminum case is better for corrosion.
That's the material calculus in a nutshell. No material wins everything. Polymer wins on impact absorption and cost. Aluminum wins on corrosion resistance and longevity. Steel wins on raw strength but loses on rust. The right answer depends on which failure pattern you're most worried about.
Daniel listed his failure pattern. Drop off a ladder, baking in the sun, forgotten in the rain. That's impact, UV, and water. The polymer case with a gasket and UV stabilizers handles all three.
The drop off the ladder is the one that worries me most for a traditional toolbox. A traditional toolbox with a cantilevered tray has moving parts inside. Drop it 3 feet and the tray slams around, the tools scatter, and the latch takes the impact. That's actually the most common failure point.
The latch.
The latch. And I have a feeling our producer has thoughts on that.
Worked a summer at an industrial supply warehouse in New Jersey. Late 90s. I ran the blemish bin, returned and damaged toolboxes sold at deep discount. You learn fast what comes back and why. It's never the material, it's the latch. A box gets dropped, it lands on the latch, the hinge pin shears, or the plastic housing cracks. On a cheap box, the latch is molded into the body. You can't replace it. The whole box is done. On a good box, the latch is a separate part. You unscrew it, you put a new one on, the box keeps going.
That's the repairability point. The latch is the canary.
I still have a union steel box from the 70s. Aluminum. I dropped it off a roof once, ran it over with a forklift another time, left it out in the rain for a week. It's dented all to hell, never rusted through. Latch still works. You know why? It's a simple metal clasp. Over-engineered, no plastic parts to fail. The secret isn't the material. It's that the design has nothing to break.
The old box wins because it's dumb.
It wins because it's simple. A metal clasp has one moving part. A modern latch has a spring, a pivot pin, a plastic housing, a rubber seal. That's four things to fail. The metal clasp just is.
That's the tension in the whole buy it for life conversation. The old simple thing lasts forever because there's nothing to break. The new engineered thing is better in every measurable way, but it has more parts, and more parts means more failure pattern. You're trading simplicity for performance.
Daniel's $15 box has both problems. Cheap material and a cheap latch. The smell is the material telling on itself, and the latch is a failure waiting to happen.
The blemish bin taught me the other thing, too. A box that comes back because it's ugly is a good box. A box that comes back because the latch broke is a bad box. The ugly box was doing its job. The latch box was never going to last.
That's a good heuristic. Buy the box that fails cosmetically, not structurally.
The union steel box is ugly. Dents, scratches, one corner smashed in. Still works. That's the whole point.
If Daniel wants buy it for life, he should be looking for the box that gets ugly but keeps working.
Or he should buy a good box and accept that the latch will need replacing someday. That's the realistic version of buy it for life. It's not immortal. It's fixable.
The warranty backs that up. Pelican's lifetime warranty covers breakage. If the latch breaks, they replace it. The box is designed around the assumption that parts will fail and be replaced.
The warehouse had a whole shelf of replacement latches. That tells you which brands expected to be repaired.
Which brands had the shelf?
Pelican, Festool, a few others. The cheap brands didn't have replacement parts. You bought a new box.
That's the real cost difference. The cheap box is cheaper because it's disposable. The expensive box is more expensive because it comes with the repair ecosystem. You're not just buying the box, you're buying the ability to fix it.
We've talked about materials, design, latches, warranties. Let's step back and answer Daniel's actual questions directly. Does quality plastic smell? No, not in any lasting way. A faint new smell for a few days, then nothing. If it still smells after a month, it's commodity grade.
Is there a metal that won't rust or dent? Anodized aluminum won't rust, and it resists denting if the geometry is smart. Ribbed panels, reinforced corners. It'll still dent under real abuse, but so will steel, and the aluminum won't rust afterward.
Is a traditional toolbox the right object? Probably not for his use case. A portable carry box, either a Pelican-style case or a modular unit from Packout or Sustainer, matches the way he actually uses it.
The weatherproofing question. The gasket is the answer. Look for a compression gasket with over-center latches, and if there's an IP rating, IP67 is the gold standard for what he described.
The cutting room floor detail I liked from the research is that the pressure equalization valve on a Pelican case is a one-way membrane. Air pressure equalizes. Water doesn't get in. That's the kind of detail you only find when the design brief was written by someone who actually uses the thing in the field.
It connects to the bigger question. Is buy it for life a realistic goal, or is it a consumerist fantasy that keeps us buying premium goods? The BIFIL community would say it's about reducing waste. But the counter is that a $300 Pelican case is still a plastic box, just with a better spec sheet.
The future angle is polymer recycling. As recycling improves, do we shift back to metal because it's infinitely recyclable, or do engineered plastics with better recyclability become the new standard? I don't know the answer, but it's the right question for the next decade of tool storage.
For Daniel specifically, the real question wasn't about materials. It was about wanting something that doesn't betray him. The toolbox is just the metaphor. He wants the thing he reaches for to work when he reaches for it.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop.
This has been My Weird Prompts.
Email us at show@myweirdprompts.com.
We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.